Brother Lewis Rushmore. We have been a supporter of Brother Rushmore for a number of years now. When we first became acquainted, his work was in India and Myanmar. And then since then, if you paid attention to his newsletters, he's gone a number of places. I'm just going to let him tell you where those are and what's going on there. I know he's not only does he go in person, but there's also a great deal of gospel literature that he's responsible for sending to parts of the world to teach that way. So we'll let him expound on that, and he has a PowerPoint in just a moment. Let's begin with prayer before we do the rest of it.
To be with the congregation here today, we will on Sunday, Lord willing, be with the congregation, the Central Church of Christ in Cleveland, Tennessee, and with the Ottawa Church of Christ Sunday night. We've also been previously in our, 9 or 10 day travel so far on this route. I had opportunity to speak at congregations elsewhere, further up, further north than this. Out in the foyer, I just placed just a sampling of some of the literature that you might want to examine. This is the latest Rushmore newsletter. And if you received by chance or saw the one previous to this, you'd say, well, what's going on? The last one was in April, and this one says it's April, too. Well, I use things as templates by erasing things that were previous and then put in the new stuff, and I didn't put in a new month. And so it might say April, but it's actually very current regarding the circumstances in which we're involved with about this work. Now, it's also available at any time anybody wants to see it by going to Gospel Gazette online, and you can click on the Rushmore newsletter in the masthead, and you'll go to that link. I don't know if you're receiving the Voice of Truth International magazine. I don't remember. We print about 40,000 of these quarterly in English, plus other languages such as Tamil and Telugu, Hindi and Nepalese, Swahili, and perhaps some others that are listed on the inside of this magazine. And then we distribute a lot of these, and of course in English in this country, but also in India where they are printed. I'm pleased to be the editor of this, and with other good Christians and that are associated with what we call world evangelism, we are endeavoring to provide massive distribution of literature stateside and abroad. Also, there's a sampling of this magazine out there in the foyer, Global Harvest, and I'm a staff writer for it, but this will give an idea of various mission works that our brethren are doing around the world, this country, but mostly overseas, not just those with whom we're associated, but others as well who provide us information. Out there in the foyer, we have a little treasure box of ballpoint pens. You probably remember these maybe from some past time that we were here. They write real well. They're very cheap. And every time you use one of them, you'll see that Lewis and Martha were here, and contact information on that. So get one for your purse or your pocket, in the car, by your chair at the house, or maybe beside your nightstand. I have a PowerPoint presentation to try and give you an update as to where everything is and what's been going on. This last physical out-of-country experience that we had was January 31st to March 2nd, 2020. And so as we were coming back into the country, this COVID thing was just being discovered and getting off and going all over the planet. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. We got back on March 2nd, as indicated there. The picture is of us inside one of the compounds, this compound for the Cotton Tree Church of Christ in Guyana, South America. You'll have other pictures. I go down there during the winter time up here because their winter is a freezing 70 to 90 degrees. And their fruits and vegetables, they're harvested all year long. Their flowers are always in bloom. And so when you're up here thinking about how nice it is to see the snow and the ice and all those sort of things, why we're suffering down there in the 70s to 90 degrees in various places of that that tropical environment. And so we go down every year, and we have a series of workshops. Our primary emphasis is to edify members of the church. There are conversions that occur, but those conversions that may occur are because of the work done by our brethren in Guyana. They've already studied with them. They have been teaching them. And then when maybe they come and hear one of us say something that we validate in their ears, things that they've already been told, and then after they're converted, then our brethren will continue working with them. That's a really better way of going about trying to evangelize. That is to have brethren on foreign soil be fully involved from the beginning to the ongoing edification of those that they reach with the gospel of Christ. And so this year's theme was, if not now, when? And then the various sub-themes were contributed by myself and also by Guyanese brethren. The primary Guyanese brother with whom I work is Nigel Milo. He's a jewel. I just love him so much. Love his family. And he was educated, as far as Bible is concerned, here in this country, mentored by an American evangelist. He's got a lot of ambition, and he really goes to town as far as the Word of God is concerned. He's built up a congregation of about 300 on Sunday morning. But you know, that's about like over here in the States, that Sunday morning and Sunday night attendance is very quite a bit. But about 300 attend on Sunday morning, or they were before the pandemic. And then he's trained about 30 of the members to go out Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays to go door knocking or go hospital visitation or distribution of literature, to set up Bible studies, to do Bible studies, whether he's there with them or not. And about the same number have dedicated themselves to contributing their own money, saving it up over the course of a year, to buy airplane tickets that they can go on a crusade in their country, in some interior, some place where the church already is, and help brethren to evangelize their own community and to edify them too. And so one of his members and one of the members of some congregation in the interior go two by two, learn how to distribute literature, how to set up Bible studies, how to conduct Bible studies. He's so ambitious that sometimes he'll call up a preacher in a congregation in Georgetown, the capital, and he'll say, well, on Saturday, my congregation's going to have a devotional on the doorstep to your church building, and then we're going to evangelize your neighborhoods. Do you want to come with us? And so that's kind of pushy, but that's a pushy in a good way regarding the gospel of Christ. I just wanted to introduce him a little bit. And so this year, if not now, when will Guyanese brethren be primarily responsible for edifying themselves? We have this Zoom and all kinds of technology that allows us to teach in various parts of this country or various parts of the world, though we may not be on site. And sometimes I think we overdo it to the extent that we push aside, we don't encourage brethren in foreign soil to step up and to shoulder some of the responsibility for their own edification and some of the responsibility likewise for evangelizing their own countries. But when, if not now, when will brethren be primarily responsible for edifying themselves? You know, when a pandemic hits, or maybe an economic crisis occurs, or maybe our numbers around this country begin to dwindle where we can't finance all the things that we formerly financed, it becomes increasingly important that we have taught brethren on foreign soil sufficiently where they can stand up for themselves. They can edify themselves and they can evangelize their own communities and their own countries. And secondly, if not now, when will Guyanese brethren be primarily responsible for evangelism? Until recently, whenever Americans would go home, no evangelism would occur in that country, at least in most places. And so they're beginning to be taught and beginning to understand that it's not just something that Americans do, but it's the responsibility of the church. They're part of the church. They're the church there on that soil, and therefore they need to participate, whether Americans are there or not, in evangelizing their own communities. When, if not now, when will Guyanese brethren be primarily responsible for financing their own local work? I believe that almost every place on the planet where our brethren are assembling, they can afford, for the most part, to take care of the local work. They may not be able to build structures. They may not be able to do mass distribution of literature. They may not be able to do TV and radio. But if we allow them, if we encourage them to do that, they can take care of assembling and the ramifications of coming together as God's people on the Lord's day and doing some of the work that the Lord expects his people to do. And then, if not now, when will Guyanese Brethren make greater use of television and radio? That wasn't my idea. That was the idea of Guyanese Brethren. And there are several TV programs down there in Guyana and radio also where our Guyanese Brethren are active in those ways. And then, if not now, when will Guyanese Brethren make preparation for the installation, rather the installation of elders at some time in the future? I'm not expecting myself or anybody else to go into the various congregations and say, you, not you, but you're the elders. Now, that's not the way it works, of course. But if no preparation is made, if no goals are had, and then, of course, requirements, that is, for us to grow toward being fully organized with elders and deacons and so forth will not occur. We have to make plans. We have to have preparation within families as they have these goals in mind and as they live their lives and so forth. In addition to the workshops that we would do, maybe about 14 of them, they have 10 regions, whereas we have states, they call them regions. 90% of the country is jungle. And so we are often found in boats going up rivers and boats going across a river, or we find ourselves in little airplanes. Some will hold maybe 7 or 9 people. Some might hold 12 people. And we're flying things that look like they've been held together with duct tape and baling wire. We can count how many rivets are missing in some of the plane that we can see as we're on the inside. We get our feet wet. We get our face wet because when going through clouds and all that, all those gaskets around the doors and windows are failing. And so we have also opportunities for ladies' classes that Martha would teach and children's classes that she would teach. We had a gospel meeting occur. I was not the speaker, but it was associated with our outing. And then whatever opportunities present themselves, we rise to the occasion. This is a part of the auditorium of the Amelia's Ward Church of Christ, where Brother Nigel Milo is the preacher. And this building was built with American money. But these ladies, in this Ladies' Day, have come from near and far. And some of them had to travel by taxi. That is, anybody who has a car is a taxi driver. If you pay the money, and they go where you want them to go. And then they had to get on a boat and cross a river. And then they had to get another taxi or a minibus and pay their fare and make their way here. And we have 300 ladies that came together for Ladies' Day. They're having this about every 2 years now. There were no Americans involved in this other than Martha was attending, as would any other lady be in that audience. This is our base of operations also. We would go out to one location or another, come back and wash our clothes, go back out and come back and wash our clothes, go back out someplace else, and so forth for all those programs that we did. Here's Martha and two of the sisters of the congregation there. The largest population segment in that country are the descendants of people from India that the British brought over as indentured servants, and they're referred to as East Indians. And then there are the descendants of freed African slaves, and then there are descendants of, there are the Amerindians, the indigenous people there, comparable to those who are referred to as Indians in North America. Very same sort of thing. And then there's a lot of intermarrying, and so a lot of variations in the races. This is Cotton Tree along the southern coast. It's on the outside of that first picture where on the other side we were with the flowers. And then we, in addition to teaching and preaching, we love to interact with them, and particularly with the little ones. And I'm interacting with a preacher's son right there. And I think he's happy about it. And I know I am. This is at the Enmore Church of Christ. They also have a children's home. The children's home... children are those who have been abandoned by their families because they either have mental deficiencies or they are physically handicapped. And so the children's home will take care of them, will school them, and will start savings accounts for them. And then when they graduate from high school, then they have a little bit of money with which to begin whatever trade it is that they've been training in. The fellow in the blue shirt there on the left with the microphone is blind, leading some of the, and he has mental deficiencies as well, but he's memorized many, many hymns, and he's leading singing there. The bottom picture is of several congregations represented for our workshop. Here we have Martha teaching some of the ladies there. And then the next picture, I'm teaching some of those who, men, women, children, dogs, cats, birds, whatever came through and was present at the time. This is at Port Kaituma. Port Kaituma is infamous for being the name associated, as far as the location is concerned, with the Jonestown Massacre. And this is at the estate congregation of our little congregation on dry land. And then we go to by boat to the next congregation up the river, Turu Mission, a very vibrant, growing congregation. A lot of congregations were represented there, and they came in their boats. There's no way to get there by land. You can't walk there. You can't drive there. If you don't come by boat, you can't come. No electricity. They use a generator. They use PowerPoint. They have songs up there on the screen like you might have. Yeah, they have our song books that we've sent over because we wanted new song books, that sort of thing. Very vibrant congregation, and congregations traveling maybe 5 hours by boat to get there to be part of this program. And here is the church boat for the Tuvalu Mission Church of Christ. If you look very carefully, there are a couple that are a little bit brighter than the rest. And you can find us. I have a floppy hat on. And so I don't know how many people are there, but this is the church boat. Go up and down the primary river on which bank the Tuvalu Mission Meeting House is and gather up those who are ready to come. Others will come by boat, their own boats. There are a lot of boats with motors, but there are still a lot of dugout canoes. It's not uncommon to see small children, elementary age, by themselves paddling down a river so they can go to school or going home from school later in the day. And then here's Martha teaching some of the ladies at the Tuvalu Mission workshop. And here's our co-speaker. Every year we have I speak, of course, and then Nigel Milo is a speaker. But every year we also rotate in another Guyanese preacher who is biblically and academically qualified to be a partner with us in what we're doing. And so this year it was time for Frederick Darrell to be our participant, our helping us. And he's in the little annex. It used to be a pavilion. They put some half walls on it and some other boards. And the men are in a circle all the way around him. And he's preaching. He's not missing a beat. He is just going all the way around, and like he's on some kind of a motorized device, as it were, and he's teaching and preaching the gospel of Christ, those themes that we talked about earlier. This is another workshop at Horsero Church of Christ. I can't remember if we flew in there or went by boat. Usually we go by airplane to one of the locations that can be on the banks of a river, and then maybe go 3 to 5 hours up a river to get to another congregation instead of flying back to the point with which you started and flying back out to another location. But once we got to Mabaruma, we had to go up a mountain, dirt road mountain, to the Horsero Meeting House, and other congregations also participated with us, both for the gospel meeting on the night and then for the workshop the next day. Here we have Martha teaching some of the ladies there. Here's a picture of a little baby that was up there. I'm not sure, but looking closely, looks like the baby might have Down syndrome, but I don't know. This is the river port at Mabaruma, and that might not be a familiar term or terminology with you, river port. They have seaports, obviously, on the coast of the Atlantic Ocean where big ships come in. Their rivers are very wide. Their rivers are very deep. And ocean-going freighters may be able to sail as far as 75 miles upriver, turn around, load or offload their cargo, and return. But the rivers go further than that. And so smaller freighters ply the rivers, and there are river ports in addition to the seaports. So this is the river port of Mabaruma. And then you have fruits and vegetables and little stands, And you know that they've got fish because you can smell it before you see it, and you still smell it when you're not there anymore. And then this is a fly. It has honorable mention because look at the size of the sighting there in relationship to the fly. That's the biggest fly I've ever seen. And I just wanted to, him to have an opportunity to be reviewed here in Lexington, Kentucky. Here we have the Kildonan Church of Christ. This is along the southern coast, along the Atlantic. And Brother Frederick Darrell is pictured here speaking to those who gathered. And here's Martha having taught those ladies there. And then I'm teaching both men and women. And then we like to find the little ones. Martha found this little one, and it just warmed right up to Martha. Martha is very happy about that, as you can see. I did not know it, but the day that we were there for that workshop was African Day. And so the sisters, these are all related to each other, either sisters or sisters-in-laws, or mother's up there too. Mother-in-law's up there. Mother and daughters. Okay. And so they decide to wear their colorful clothes that have reference to Africa, the culture there, in addition to, of course, other ladies were there that didn't share that culture. We went to Ledham. The British do not pronounce the TH as we do. It is that the H is silent in Ledham. This is on the border with Brazil. And everybody up there except Brother Frederick Darrell and myself are Amerindians. And this is there's a school there, sort of a training school for preachers as well. But we have at that site had our workshop program. There was a baptism. I had nothing to do with it. I just watched. And so we're on our way to the river so the baptism can occur. And they're in the water. There's not lovely water. And in those rivers down there, in some of those rivers, there's piranha. There's other fish that have teeth like that that want to bite you. And there are anacondas, big snakes that are as big as we are around. And there are also caiman, which are similar to alligators and crocodiles. And maybe some things that aren't very, very good as far as bacteria and things of that nature. And so he was baptized. They're using our songbooks with which to sing that were sent down there. Everybody's got a cell phone. I have a cell phone, but I don't connect to their system. I'm standing up on the bank way up there because it's kind of rough going down there, and I was afraid I'd fall and get hurt. And you'll see when they come up out of the water that it is not really a convenient circumstance at all, but that's not the point of it at all, of course. This is someone being baptized into Christ. Now, that same day, he's going to hug a woman up here when he gets up the top. That's his wife. They were just married that morning, and I don't remember in what sequence all of this happened. She was restored to the church, and he was baptized. And so we have this young family beginning right there, and we have a church family here. Some of these have come from a long way to be a part of the program or a part of the school program that's going on there. This is a Paramacatoy. This is also along the Brazilian border. This is up in the mountains, about 4,000 or 5,000 feet up. And it's kind of like a grassland on top of a mountain surrounded by jungle, valleys and mountains. And this is how you get there. You fly and land on a little airplane like that on a tarn ship runway. This is one of our favorite places to go. We fly in various kinds of aircraft. We fly in that one. It can hold about 12 people. And then this is a government plane. There was a program going on by the government. The then president's wife was there with all of her entourage so she could speak and so she could dedicate a water standpipe. You know, a plastic pipe coming up out of the ground with a spigot on it. And there was a solar-powered pump to pump water up to that village, and they have a standpipe now with water coming out of it. And the very first day, that thing leaked. You couldn't shut that thing off completely at all. I think everything there was probably made in China. And then this is Brother Nigel Milo teaching there. And then we had a surprise. The school, they have a government school there. and the children were letting out to go assemble for the president's wife to speak, but it wasn't time for her to speak, and so the grade schools showed up, came in our building, and filled up the pews and so forth, lined the walls. And so I quickly put Martha, pressed her into service, and the men that were there, we went to the next building over, which is somebody's house, but everybody's house has a part of which they use as a store. And we were out there on the porch and had our men's class while Martha taught these children. Well, we got our wires crossed. They didn't come to be taught. They came to teach us. They came to recite memory verses from the Bible that they are taught in public school. They came to sing hymns that are taught to sing in public school. Quite a bit of difference from what we experience here in this country. And so we taught them, and they also sang songs and quoted passages of Scripture to us. There's Brother Frederick Darrell teaching on that porch I mentioned. These are all Amerindians. The three on the right are students. They live in Monkey Mountain. I've been to Monkey Mountain several times. And I think their parents may be standing behind them. The two on the left are the preacher and preacher's wife from Monkey Mountain. And one reason Martha likes to go into the interior, particularly to Monkey Mountain, is that she is one head taller than the preacher at Monkey Mountain. When he stands behind their podium, all you can see up there is his head. I mean, he's that short. I don't think that their diet is the same as ours. They live off of the land. They eat root vegetables and things of that nature, bananas or plantains and stuff like that. And but at any rate, they have to walk 8 hours through the jungle to get from Monkey Mountain to Paramacatory, where they're pictured here, the girls to go to school, or their parents and the preacher and his wife to attend our workshop program. And so they have to go. It's not a straight shot. It's down and across and up and down through the jungle. And when you get to a crossroads of trails in the jungle, you got to figure out, remember, which one is mine. One time those girls forgot which one they were supposed to take, and they did not arrive home. They realized they'd made a mistake, had to retrace their steps and sleep in the jungle, and then next morning continue their journey back to their homes, as their parents also were journeying toward them. So I'm always inspired when I go to foreign lands where people who have much less than do we make a much greater effort to be Christians and to worship God and tell others about the gospel of Christ. We have shadows in this case. Martha shadows this little girl. Every time we go there, she shadows Martha. She's getting bigger every year. This little boy was my shadow. Sometimes lowlanders come to the mountains to work for a little while and then go back to the lowland or the coast. And sometimes they get indigenous women pregnant. So this little boy is the only one like him in that village. Everybody else looks like the little girl over here on the left picture. And so he certainly has a little bit of a challenge in that village. I began playing with a child, and all of a sudden there were several children, and all of a sudden the game became monkey in the middle, and I didn't know that I was the monkey until this happened. But I caught one, as you see in the picture on the right. So we really enjoy our children. These were our sleeping arrangements. They put concrete in this room they used for a classroom. And we had to sleep on the floor. And my arthritis never hurt me so much in so many days consecutively as it did the time that we were up there. Here's Richmond across the Essequibo River. The river we cross is 20 miles wide. There are hundreds of islands in the river, many of which are inhabited. And I used to cross that river in a water taxi, 25 people on five benches, wooden benches, and some of them are open boats. Others have a canopy over top of them, a wooden canopy, and 45 minutes of this. you wonder why the boat hasn't broken up. And it's certainly breaking up our backs and breaking up our hips. And so whenever possible, we don't go by water taxi anymore. We go by, as pedestrians, on a car carrier. It takes longer to get there. But when you climb up the steps, which is a challenge, and get to the passenger deck, they have seats like they have in airplanes. And so we have a better time up there. We missed the boat on one of our workshops across that river. And we thought we got there to the dock as we saw it out there. We were hoping it was coming in, but it was going out. And so we had to take the water taxi. We had another workshop later on that section of ground, you know, a different place. And we made sure we didn't miss the boat that time. And then here I'm speaking at that location. Their podium is concrete, by the way. And then I didn't know this until I started going overseas in Asia and also in South America, but bananas, and this amazes me, bananas grow up. They don't grow down. I would have thought gravity would have made them grow down, but they don't grow down. They grow up. And so here's some bananas outside the back door of one of those meeting houses, Brother Nigel Milo speaking. Some of the preachers in the area that have come to be a part of our workshop program as listeners. And here's Martha with a ladies' class. And then this is the thinnest, tallest preacher I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I saw my grandson yesterday left his belt. He took it off his pants and I saw it lying around. I believe that, and my grandson's 5. This man could probably wear that belt. He is as skinny as a rail. He was leading singing on that occasion. The tide is out on the bottom right-hand picture. And the tide goes out. It takes the rivers with it. And then there's one of the ferries that we would ride, some planes on which we rode. That one will hold 7 people. And the instructions, in case there's an emergency, is go out the door. Do you see where those propellers are? I'm not leaving. I'm staying with the plane. We have troubles. I'm going down with it. I don't think jumping out in front of the propellers is an option that I want to exercise myself. Again, one of the ferries we were on, or one like ours. Then comes COVID-19, the pandemic. Lockdown stateside and abroad. Interruption of stateside and international travel. My dad died about 1.5 years ago. And this trip enabled me to, for the first time, go up and find out where he was buried. There weren't any funerals. I mean, you bury the dead when we can't travel some places. And so we went reflected with my brothers in New York and Pennsylvania and visited my father's grave for the first time after 1.5 years as the pandemic limited travel. Many preachers and Christians in this country and abroad have died from COVID, including one of our most noted preachers in Burma or Myanmar died. And so most church houses in stateside and abroad were closed. Christians worshiped in their homes. And we could not go to Burma in India in 2020 because of COVID. We cannot go there now either because of COVID, and also because regarding Burma or Myanmar, the military on February 1st overthrew the democratic government. And every day, Burmese are protesting, and every day the Burmese army is purposely killing demonstrators, doing headshots. When they don't just shoot randomly, they shoot to kill. And now there has been a war going on in Burma for about 70 years. Not all the tribes would buckle under to the Burmese. Burma is comprised of tribes like North America was before the Europeans came over. And it's still like that. And one of the tribes, more than one of the tribes, will not buckle under. Burmese tribes are the biggest, and they try to control the country. And so there's armed resistance been going on for 70 years. The resistors can't overpower the government. The government cannot overpower them. China is friends to both sides, arming both sides. And so it goes on. But now, because of the overthrow of the democratic government, protesters are less likely to protest, more likely to go and be trained and armed by these standing armies in the country that resist the government And the first episode or the first page of all of this unfolding is going to be guerrilla warfare. And then after which, a full-fledged civil war if things continue in the direction that they're going now. Among the protesters were the medical community, doctors and nurses. And so doctors and nurses are public enemy number one in the country, have had to flee their clinics and hospitals, and they have to do any medical work they do underground. They have to move around. And so COVID is not being addressed at all in that country. And so we have the military overthrow. We have the civil unrest. We have approaching guerrilla warfare and civil war, and we have COVID going unchecked. We can't go there. Our brethren are doing well. Our brethren are used to living under military rule. They had for 50 years before democracy was introduced into the country. India is being ravaged by COVID. You're not allowed to go there unless you go there for business reasons, and they don't consider evangelism business because they have a state religion. They don't want us there. And so that's what's going on as far as foreign travel is concerned. I have an associate in World Evangelism, Brother Jerry Bates. He's been going back and forth to Africa, flying Emirate Air and flying through the Mideast because we can't go to Europe. We can't go to Asia. We can't. We may or may not be able to go to places in South America, but Africa is still open if you go between all the places we can't go. And so he's been going there and coming back. We opted not to go down to Guyana this year, but our brethren wanted the program to continue. We funded the program as we otherwise would. We had 7 locations instead of 14 because of restrictions in that country because of COVID. But the workshops were well attended. Instead of having an American present, it's all Guyanese presenters. And then this is the second time that all Guyanese, without American participation, have gone all over their country, wherever they could, and presented God's Word. That's a milestone. The first time was when my wife, Bonnie, became deathly ill and died. I did not go, and they were able to carry out the program very well. I've got confidence in them. They need to stand on their own feet everywhere in the country. We need to stand on our feet, help where we can, but don't enable people to become perpetual dependents when instead we should teach them to stand up and do what God wants them to do as they have opportunity to do that. And so other than the going overseas, we send $17,500 a year to India to finance a Hindi TV program out of New Delhi. We send thousands and thousands of dollars to India to print literature in various languages and to distribute it. We send down at least 2 shipments of books and Bibles and communion cups, things of that nature, to our brethren in Guyana. It's distributed throughout the country where they will use it. There are approximately 100 congregations in Guyana. Because we didn't spend all the money we ordinarily would have spent for our program this year in Guyana, we didn't go down there, all the expense of going and coming, the expense of us being down there, traveling and being lodged and eat and so forth. We were able to pick up a TV program for a year that it had run out of funds that Brother Nigel Milo was preaching. He was doing a program in Georgetown, the capital, and also Linden, where he lives, the second largest city. Money ran out this year at different times for both of them. We were able to pick up one of the programs for a year. If we could raise enough other or additional funds, we could finance a program in Georgetown that would also reach the second largest city, Linden, and much of the country. But we'll work with what we got and do what we can with what we've got. And so we're working every day. I have maybe 34 different nations that send me emails with some regularity and with whom I correspond. We're always working with putting up all the layout and so forth for the Voice of Truth International magazine, which is a quarterly. It takes a quarter to put together a quarterly. And then monthly magazine, Gospel Gazette Online. The problem with a monthly magazine, it comes around every month. October is about to happen, and with this trip that I'm making in the States right now, it's going to be late. So we'll do what we can, when we can, with what we've got. And then this is the bulk food section of one of the grocery stores in Guyana. I just like the look of it. And I'm sure it would resemble what it used to be years ago in our country in various places. Now, Guyana loves America. Their TV programming is American TV. Everything except their ATVs and motorcycles and cars comes from America. They love America. And Brother Nigel's family lives in America. He could come too with his family, but he won't, because there's still things he can do in his country regarding the gospel of Christ. But the very modern things are going in there. I can go to Dairy Queen if I want to in the mall in the capital city. I can have Pizza Hut pizza. I can have some of the chicken chains, chicken down there. They have a real nice American-style grocery store, a really nice Chinese restaurant. When I walked in the first time, I'm going to treat my host family, and we're going to go to this Chinese restaurant that they'd heard about. I walk in there, and there's cloths on the tables, and everybody there works there, has uniforms on, and everything looks shiny and bright. I think, we're going to have to leave one at a time. And that they were figuring I'd be the last one. I'd be washing some dishes for a while. But it wasn't that bad at all, of course. But very nice things are also available. I appreciate the encouragement. I appreciate the prayers. I appreciate the financial participation by individual families, as well as this congregation and other congregations that make what we do possible. And so I don't know what else to say, but thank you. And I guess that means that you get to go home now. Thank you very much for your kind attention.